The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Bob Dio, engineering and producing on the other side of the glass. And together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday, the 11th of July, 2019. Highly unusual that our summer thunderstorm season has not begun by this time of year. In fact, the latest starting summer thunderstorm season, aka monsoon, is July 20th. So we could very much be pushing that, as the revised weather forecast now showing less than 20% on the chances for the next 7 to 10 days on a rain possibility. So we've got really hot weather here, but very little. I don't know, 20% is okay, but that's not what we really need to see to crank up the monsoon. It's 10:30, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Something's happening in San Diego beside cooler weather than Tucson. Front page story at the New York Times. Probably the most overcrowded migrant shelter in the United States, seeing 300 migrants a day. Suddenly, it's eerily empty, according to the Times. Number of people arriving there has plunged in recent weeks amid this decline in arrivals along the southern border, where the Department of Homeland Security said apprehensions have dropped 28% just in June. Is that happening? Is that being reflected here in Tucson, Arizona, over at the former Benedictine Monastery on North Country Club, which has been the home to thousands of asylum seekers since the first of the year? On the live line is Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman. Councilman, how are you, first of all?
Well, I'm doing well, and you know, it's just the humidity is very enjoyable when it's 106 degrees outside. So
there you go.
Count our blessings, right?
So on this issue of San Diego seeing very few migrants, is it being reflected here in Tucson?
To a degree, it is, but it's also, to a degree, it's not a surprise, because every year during the summertime, the numbers drop. We've been tracking this for the last 5 years when we were doing the Alitas project out of the Greyhound bus depot, and this is a time of year when numbers tend to drop a little bit. This year, though, there is the added component of the Trump administration threatening tariffs and the trade sanctions with Mexico, and so they have stepped up. The Mexican government have stepped up efforts within Mexico to either A, keep people in the Central American countries they've been coming from, or B, interdict them in Mexico and either hold them or send them home. I don't want people to feel as though either of those is a positive option, looked at from the perspective of the people who are trying to get out of Guatemala, out of Honduras, out of El Salvador. Because the conditions that we hear about regularly, as recently as yesterday when I was over at the Benedictine, are stories of starvation. There is a young mom right now walking the halls of the Benedictine who gave birth at Banner to a 5-pound preemie a few days ago, and she is going to stay here until that little girl starts gaining some weight and can travel safely. We have the regular stories of, for instance, the woman who showed up last week at the Benedictine who said that their bus was stopped in the middle of Mexico. The driver was fatally shot, and all the women on the bus were raped. This is a situation where we can certainly look at the conditions of the detention facilities, and we should. From the standpoint of the conditions that people are being held in, the overarching picture, though, is how are we as a country to react to the conditions that these people are fleeing? And they are conditions of abject poverty, of starvation, of murder, of dismemberment, of rape, of exploitation and extortion. So I think the bigger story is Yes, the numbers are down. To the extent that they're down because of heat and it's the summer and numbers are going to tend to be down, that's one thing. To the extent that they're down because we are forcing people to live in those kinds of conditions, I think that's an entirely different conversation. And frankly, from my perspective, shame on us if we're going to force people to continue to stay in those conditions.
Yesterday, we had Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie on the program. And as you know, Councilman, the county's Board of Supervisors will consider this plan on August 6th, this plan that would put migrant families perhaps being housed in the open space at the Pima County Juvenile Detention Center. And Supervisor Christie, from his remarks yesterday, doesn't seem to be on board with this. He doesn't understand why Tucson has become this magnet for migrants.
Well, then, then I maybe ought to call Steve and invite him to come and tour the monastery, and we'll bring a translator along if he needs to speak to some of the people in Spanish. I am on board with this, and if Steve has a better option, then he should bring it forward, and he should have brought it forward 5 months ago. We've talked with TUSD. I've toured Gabe Trujillo from TUSD through the monastery. We've talked to Sunnyside. We've talked to the Tenet Healthcare System about their heart hospital that's out at River and Stone. We've looked at plenty of options. The question as to why Tucson is a magnet is kind of silly, frankly, because it's Tucson, it's El Paso, it's border cities all along the border. We're not sending out invitations to Guatemala and to Honduras and El Salvador to come to Tucson. We have a former monastery here that you can stay at for the couple of days that you need in order to get your bus ticket and get yourself over to Tuscaloosa or New York or Chattanooga. They're showing up at the border after having traveled for a couple of weeks at least on foot or under the umbrella of a coyote or a trafficker to get to the border because they're trying to get away from conditions that Steve Christie or I or you or anybody else who cares about their family would try and get away from. Unless and until we have an administration in Washington, both parties working together to correct the conditions that exist in Central America, they will continue to come. And then the question is, do we have a moral obligation to do what we have always done with refugee communities since this country was formed? And there's a lady standing in the middle of New York Harbor right now holding up a sign proclaiming that. Then, unless and until we're ready to say we're not taking refugees anymore, then yeah, we do have a moral obligation to take care of them. What the county is doing, and I was with Chuck Huckleberry yesterday. I've met with him multiple times. I've toured the county facility, and frankly, we need to get beyond calling it a former juvenile detention facility, because the changes that we're making out there are such that it is not a detention facility. It is a place of respite. These people are coming here for a couple of days while we do numbers of things. Number one, we get them food. We get them clothing. We get them medical care that they need from having crossed the desert in 100 degrees for 2 weeks. We make sure that their next of kin back in Guatemala are contacted to say your family got here safely. We get them a bus ticket paid for by their family or their sponsor on the East Coast, wherever they're headed. We get them on the bus. We make sure that they're taken care of and then track their progress when they're en route so that we make sure that they get to their final destination safely. These people, from Mr. Christie's information, are here legally. They have been processed by the Border Patrol or by CBP. They have papers that say you have 15 days to present yourself to a judge somewhere else in this country. So for people like him to continue to foster this simply false narrative that we're being overrun by a bunch of illegals and we don't have any moral obligation to help these people is simply incorrect, and that's the kindest way I can phrase it.
Are you going to call Steve and ask him or invite him to come tour with you the facility?
If he's interested, I'm happy to take him through there, maybe educate him as to what these people have really been through. I would like to see the county facility be renamed the Elitis Center. Elitis means wings in Spanish, and for the last 5 years, it's been the Elitis Project in Casa Elitis, under the umbrella of Catholic Community Services, who have been receiving these families, over 12,000 this year, through the monastery itself. And the fact that those numbers have been such as they are, we've had significant plumbing issues. We've had issues in the kitchen with the gas going out and spending dollars to maintain that infrastructure as long as we need to. The county facility is vacant. It's been vacant for years. Right now we are in the process of laying some carpet down, of taking doors off so it's not a detention facility, giving it a facelift in terms of paint jobs, and in the courtyards, the exercise areas, putting picnic tables with umbrellas so they can be out in those areas without, having to be in the sun. We're going to make it a welcoming facility. The county, to their credit, is offering a $100 a year lease. They are applying for humanitarian aid through the Stone Garden Project, and so it's all systems go, and they're going to vote on this, I believe, on August the 6th.
Yep.
And if Mr. Christie wants to vote no on it, then I would hope that he, in the aftermath of that vote, comes up with a better alternative, because if his alternative is street releases, which is what we're looking at if we don't come up with an option in terms of a facility for Border Patrol or ICE to drop these people off, then what he's proposing by extension is tell Border Patrol to drive these thousands of people who don't speak the language, who've been on the road for weeks, who are poorly clothed, poorly fed, and sometimes ill from the effects of dehydration, drop them off at the bus depot and let them fend for themselves.
All right. Councilman Steve Kasachek sticks around for another segment with us. My favorite bakery in town is Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's, located northeast corner Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. How about a great sandwich right now? Hot turkey sandwich would be really nice. Bag of chips with that. Of course, breakfast is something we've talked about almost every day because it is new and it's doing very well at Mona's. They're open at 6:30 in the morning for your breakfast. The hot grill up and running, so check it out. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. There's also a link to Mona's at BuckmasterShow.com. We'll continue with Councilman Kasachek. And this news that there could finally be a downtown convention center hotel in our future. That's next with Steve Kasachek.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Steve Kasacek is with us, ward, your particular ward, councilman. You've got an event coming up. I wanted to move on beyond the monastery, but I do want to get the word out about this art event that's coming up. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Since January, we've run over 12,000 people through the monastery. A large percentage of those are children, again, for Steve Christie's advice. These are not criminals. These are young kids. If we took in 50 people, I had about 50 people staying at my ward office a couple of weekends ago, and probably 35 of the 50 were under 12 years old. Since the operation began, though, one of the things that a couple of the volunteers have been doing are just inviting the kids up to do art. And we're calling it the art of asylum, and we've retained all the drawings that they've done, and these are not Picasso or you know the works of art that you're going to see in the Louvre or something like that. These are drawings that 4 and 5 and 6 and 10 year old kids are doing, and they express what we ask them to do is just draw what you love, and but in the context of that, though, they're As all art does, it's sort of the universal language. They're expressing sort of what's inside of them. So Friday, tomorrow evening from 6 until 8, the lady who's been overseeing this artwork over at the monastery, she's right this very second over at my office hanging a bunch of it up. And we're going to have a show, and it'll be the Art of Asylum, and she'll speak to some of the stories that we've heard and what we're seeing in the pictures, you know, sort of the interpretation that the kids are expressing. We've seen pictures of bird cages with a door open and a bird flying out. I mean, so what's the story behind that, and where was that little kid from? And so I hope people spend, you know, if they can't come on tomorrow night, this display will be up in my community room, which is open 5 days a week, you know, business hours, and even after for other groups. Through August, and so it'll be up for a while, but it really is the story behind the faces, and kids are pretty unvarnished in the way they express themselves, and so lots of good stuff. And so again, the opening is tomorrow 6 to 8, and the exhibit itself will continue to be up July and August.
And your office address, please?
3202 East First. It's across the street from the loft behind the Walgreens.
All right, moving on to downtown. We may actually get nearly a 300-room Hyatt Regency in downtown Tucson. Is that in the works?
It is. Since I started doing this in 2009, shortly thereafter, the Hotel Arizona shut down. And it's been an eyesore. It's a boat anchor downtown. It's the first thing people see when they come off the freeway. It's a long stone's throw from the TCC. And we need a convention hotel. We've got the AC Marriott. And at the time that development agreement was put into place, the guys who are doing the hotel, own the Hotel Arizona, said that they didn't believe that the deal points were good. They didn't think the AC was gonna thrive. In fact, it's doing fine. And since then, we've been moving forward with in partnership with Reina Nueva with another hotel on the east side of the convention center. And there are a couple of others popping up downtown. And so when I took this on in 2009, the city was engaged in trying to put together a $200 million high-end full-service convention center hotel that the city was going to backstop the downside on the debt on the bonds on. That was one of the main reasons that I ran for this, was to make sure this seat was to make sure that the city of Tucson was not backstopping debt when it came to a convention center hotel. And my mantra at the time was, let's try and hit some singles and doubles and not swing for the fence and get it all done in one lump sum. Let the market develop. And with the AC and the other ones I mentioned, the market is developing. And these are, you know, 150 and 200 room hotels at moderate price points. So finally, the guys from HSL, I believe, have seen the writing on the wall that, number one, if they ask for something in terms of incentives that's significantly greater than what other developers are getting, the answer is going to be no. And it has been no. We've had some proposals offered in the last couple of years, and we've said, you know, go back to the drawing board and sharpen your pencil, because nobody else is asking for that. The other thing I think that they're seeing is that other smaller quantity-wise hotels are popping up, and we're going to reach some sort of a market saturation point at some time, and they may be the guys on the sideline watching the parade go by. So we've got a good offer, I believe. That will be proven out with the economic analysis that we just authorized to have done. That analysis will determine whether or not the incentives they're offering or they're asking for exceed the benefit back to the taxpayers. We're governed by a state constitutional gift clause, which says that we cannot offer incentives that exceed the value back to the taxpayer. So, Bill, what we're doing is what we did on Tuesday was authorize that third party outside economic analysis. And if the numbers come back in the taxpayer's favor, then I don't see any reason not to move forward with this hotel. It'd be 250 to 300 rooms. That's still to be determined. Hyatt Regency, as you said, as the brand. And it would be a really good attraction for convention visitors that'll help market the TCC. Reina Nueva's has got about $70 million more of upgrades that they have on the books for the Tucson Convention Center. So if we can help move this hotel along and Rio continues to upgrade the TCC, I think the entire community benefits.
There was another significant development. Normally there's not a lot of news in the summer, but that council meeting that you had the other night, this really a first-of-its-kind agreement with the Pascua-Yaqui tribe to build and operate a casino near a West Grant Road and Interstate 10, this is a big deal.
Well, so in a nutshell, how much time do we have? So
I've only got 2.5 minutes.
Okay, I'll give you the Reader's Digest
please,
version.
Please.
The land is owned by the tribe. The land used to be a movie theater over at I-10 and Grant. What the tribe has asked us to do is agree to put the land in what's called a trust. The trust would be with the federal government, and in essence, it would make it Indian land. It would make it a part of the Pascua-Yaqui Reservation. My concerns about it were along the lines of, if we were to do this, are we essentially eliminating the public voice in any future rezoning? And the chairman, Chairman Valencia, got up and I asked him the questions, you know, what kind of outreach do you do if this is, you know, if this is Indian land and you go through a rezoning, will the public still, the surrounding area, still have a voice in how that development is to occur? Things such as compliance with the dark skies ordinance, traffic and hours of operation, and police hot pursuit agreements, and the ability to, TPD is still involved and a player in the area, because these are still residents of the city of Tucson. He was very open, and we have an IGA, an intergovernmental agreement, that's checking all those boxes. And so what we agreed to do was to sign on to this trust. the ball now shifts over to the federal government to do an analysis of it. It's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen in 2 years. It's going to be a very slow and sort of ponderous process. But what we did was really make the first move in partnership with the Pasquayaki to say that we will agree in principle with putting this land into a trust, and so that it becomes a part of the Indian reservation, and they can move forward with all the state gaming compacts and those kinds of things that really become a state and federal issue. But with the overarching comment that this is still within the city of Tucson limits, and so I wanted to make sure that we weren't doing with the Pasquayaki what I was taking umbrage with the university of doing with the Honors College, and that is doing some sort of a land swap to and eliminating the people's voices who live around there in terms of the impacts on them. And I think that we got that achieved. And from an economic standpoint, it could be quite significant. We did include as a part of the IGA that any tax monies generated through any development that happens going forward will have to, the tax generated back to the city will have to equal or approximately equal what we otherwise would have gotten if it were but for this agreement.
All right, Councilman, three big stories we talked about, the future there of the migrants and possible Hyatt Regency downtown and possibly a new casino. So lots going on in the city, right?
Nothing goes south in the summer. It's it's always busy stuff, and,
oh, yeah,
and it's good stuff. We're doing some good things.
All right, Councilman, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to talking with you again in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Steve Kasacek with us on the Buckmaster Show on 1030 Trusted Local News Talk. We are your source in Tucson for news talk. All right, we're at now the midway point of the Buckmaster Show. Renowned Comet Discoverer, former Parade Magazine science editor, David Levy. He's on the live line coming up next as we continue on this Thursday afternoon. The program, Buckmaster.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news talk station. Big event coming up over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's the annual Clay Festival. Everything to do with clay, that means some great pottery. Festival features all sorts of hands-on workshops, exhibits, tours. There'll be a Clay Fest market, all sorts of activities. July 15th, right around the corner, coming up this weekend through the 21st in Silver City, which is only a three-hour drive from Tucson. It's cooler over there, by the way. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the listing of great places to stay and so many activities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's go now to Vail, Arizona. Dr. David Levy, his observatory is based in Vail. He is the Buckmaster Show contributor on science. He's the former science editor of Parade Magazine, now head of and founder of Sharing the Sky Science Education Organization. He is one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. 23 comets, including the very famous co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9. That was the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in the solar system. David Levy's autobiography has just been launched, and the publisher is the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. First of all, Dr. Levy, I presume, how are you, sir?
Pretty well. It's good to hear your voice again, Bill.
Thank you very much. What are they doing to promote this autobiography? Is it going to be available to everybody?
It's available to everybody, and in Tucson, anywhere in the United States, in fact, you can get it from Starzona, which is on North Oracle Road, and it's www.starzona.com, or you can just go into the store and pick up a copy there. I will be doing a couple of book signings later on in the year, in October. There will be one at the Tucson Amateur Astronomy Association in October, and then the Tucson Festival of Books next year. I will be holding a book signing there. So, but if you don't want to wait that long, you can get a copy at Starzona. That was what I would recommend.
Do you go into the topic, David Levy? Did you ever expect to discover a comet, or is that something that kind of jumped up and surprised you?
Well, it kind of surprised me because it took so long, Bill. The goal was to start a search for a comet or a nova, an exploding star in the sky. And then later on, I had a second purpose, which was actually to discover a comet or a nova in the sky. And then I added a third purpose, which was to do a research project on comets and novae in the sky. And that third purpose eventually led to my master's degree in English literature and astronomy at Queen's University in Canada, and to my doctorate degree at the Hebrew University, which I got just about 9 years ago. So it's been actually the single most successful project of my life, next to the fact that I met Wendy and married Wendy.
There you go. That was 1984, that first comet, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Has this been good for you, good for the soul, as far as the search, looking at the stars, searching for comets? Has it been good for your overall mental well-being? Let's put it that way.
Yes, it has. In fact, if I had searched all these years and never found a comet, I probably would have given up by now, but it is so special when I'm out there. And as you know, we've had a bunch of clear nights in the last week, and I've actually been out there searching the sky for comets, still as I always have. And with all of the electronic discoveries going on right now, it's highly unlikely that I will find another comet just with my eye, but I'm still looking. And I'm still looking because I really do enjoy just the search out there. It's a lot of fun.
Well, it is. It's probably very good for your overall well-being, isn't it?
Oh, I hope so. Might add to my life a few minutes here, a few minutes there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a very special experience for me, and I really do enjoy doing it. When I'm out there under the stars, looking up at the night sky, I'm as close to being in outer space as I ever really need to get.
That's a very
special feeling.
How about a search for asteroids?
Well, as part of the work that I did with the Shoemakers that led to the discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9, I am part of the discovery team of about 50 different asteroids. And after that, a colleague of mine, Tom Glinos, and I were discovering asteroids for a while. In fact, those asteroids, once they get discovered, get named. And I'm wondering if you can think of any asteroids that we have proposed names for over the years.
Well, one of the great surprises to me during the television show that I did for 22 years on Arizona Illustrated was the evening that you were with me on the set at Channel 6 at KUAT, and you surprised me, and I'll tell you, it was a big surprise. You surprised me by saying, Bill Buckmaster, you now have an asteroid named for you. And I believe at the time, only Walter Cronkite in the news profession has had an asteroid named for him.
Yeah, we were very careful about deserving broadcasters, and it turned out that there were only two that we really felt like really deserved it, and he was one obvious, and you were another obvious choice.
Well, that's
for that. But we that day, I think we did an asteroid for the University of Arizona, which
yes,
you were very pleased with.
Yep.
But then we threw this extra one out, and takes about a year to go through the process of naming an asteroid. So that was a lot of fun.
Well, it was certainly a big honor. Let's see if we can get a question in from Richard on our live line. Real quickly, please, Richard, with David Levy.
David, I wanted to ask you to get your response to a quick statement I'm going to give you. It's not mine, but here's the statement. God, the first source and center of the universe, of which all creativity, love, and power emanates from, is greater and more complex than all the seven super universes put together.
Okay.
Well, really, I really don't want to talk about. I do consider myself a very spiritual person, but people get interested in astronomy for many reasons. And spirituality is one of the reasons that I'm into astronomy, but that's as far as I wish to take it at this point, I think.
Well, it's been a good summer. It's not been a good summer as far as the rains coming. I was commenting, David Levy, at the beginning of the program, in my 31 years here in town, this is the latest start to our summer thunderstorm season. That's had a mixed blessing because it has not been good for getting some moisture, but it's been pretty good for observing, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been pretty good for observing, but we might get rain in the next couple of days. What
I hope
suppose?
So. I hope so. It's time for the David Levy, Dr. David Levy quote of the month on the Buckmaster Show.
Okay.
David, it's all yours.
Time, so this is going to be a short one. It's a very famous quote from Henry David Thoreau, which my brother introduced me to after I graduated from Acadia. If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away.
Very nice.
Thank you.
David Levy, thank you very much, and it's great visiting with you as always, and we'll look forward to your appearance with us in August. I believe
yes,
we have set up a date.
We
so
have set up good. It last day for August.
There we go. David, have a great 30 days or so before we talk to you again. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, and you too, Bill.
All right. Dr. David Levy with us on the Buckmaster Show. We're so honored to have him on the program. He's our contributor on science. We've got over 24 great contributors to this program. One of them is waiting in the wings. He's on the live line today, is our legal contributor, attorney Don Luce. We'll speak with Don as we continue on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, after I quickly tell folks, and gladly so, about Green Things, my favorite nursery in town. They have all the green plants. And as Bob Dio does that 30-second commercial for them every show, Bob does such a great job with that. He talks about Zocalo Village. That's the new component over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Come by, tour the five shops at Zocalo Village. Check it out, greenthingsaz.com. Don Luce is next.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster back with you on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news talk, your source for trusted local news talk in Tucson. We're joined on the live line by attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor, is the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books now in their second printing. Don, how are you today, sir?
I'm okay, Bill. Thank you. It's good to hear your voice.
Good to hear you. Arizona voters could get the chance next year to legalize recreational use of marijuana. There is a big effort, Don, underway to expand what we already have in the legalization effort here in the state. Could you articulate that for us?
I'll be happy to. So just to refresh the memory of your listeners, 2010 was a pretty big year in Arizona for this issue, because that was the year that the Medical Marijuana Act was placed on the ballot. That was a voter initiative, and that passed, that Medical Marijuana Act passed, by the slimmest of margins. There was not any ballot initiative on the 2012 ballot or the 2014, but on the 2016, there was a initiative to legalize the recreational use of marijuana in Arizona. That did not pass. unlike the 2010 effort, which did pass, the 2016 effort actually failed by about 4 percentage points. The issue, I believe, is going to be revisited during our next election in 2020, which, of course, will be a presidential election. And the people in the industry are indicating that they are prepared to literally spend millions of dollars to get this initiative approved by the voters.
Apparently, there's a poll. Bob, you want to pull that up again for me on the screen? There was a poll that's suggesting, Don Luce, Arizona voters are warming to the idea of recreational marijuana. Do you know how many states now have that in the United States, recreational marijuana that's legal?
There are 11 states, plus the District of Columbia. The last state to legalize recreational use was Illinois. That law doesn't take effect until January 1st of 2020, but there are now 11. In addition, there are 22 states that legalize medical use of marijuana. So if you do the count, it's well over a majority of the states have some form of law that permits the use of marijuana, the legal use of marijuana. But the trend clearly is that recreational marijuana is going to be permitted in, I believe, the majority of states within the next several years. And it's also interesting to note what's happening with our neighbors to the north. You know, Canada just on a nationwide basis adopted a resolution to allow the recreational use of marijuana. And even Mexico, which I think is typically thought of as a more conservative political body, is exploring the limited use of marijuana. So this isn't just Arizona, it's not just the United States for that matter. Canada and Mexico are also trending in that same direction.
But Don, it's still, marijuana is illegal in the United States. Can you kind of articulate that for us, this kind of disconnect between the states and federal law about possession of marijuana, please?
The Drug Enforcement Administration is tasked with enforcing federal drug laws. Drugs are categorized into various schedules depending on their medical usefulness and propriety. So Schedule 1, which is a group of drugs that has been determined to have no medical benefit or otherwise are not permitted to be prescribed for medical conditions, includes heroin, it includes LSD, and it includes marijuana. That classification, despite numerous attempts to have it changed, has not been successfully changed, and marijuana is still deemed to be a Schedule I drug that cannot be prescribed or used for any legitimate medical purpose under federal law. But what's happened over the years, especially since, oh, let's say 2010, for instance, the Department of Justice has essentially adopted an informal position that basically says if a medical marijuana dispensary is being operated in accordance with its own state laws and there are no crimes being committed in connection with that operation, they are not going to use their resources to shut that dispensary down or to take enforcement action against the owners.
What is this, if this were to pass, make the ballot in Arizona and then pass, how does that affect the dispensaries that are already up and running? What would the logistics of this be, Don Luce?
That's a really good point. In 2016, when this initiative was placed on the ballot the last time, the provision that got the ire of a lot of people up was that the existing medical marijuana dispensaries would essentially have first choice, first option to operate recreational dispensaries. And a lot of people didn't think that that was fair. There are only about 130 dispensaries statewide. So having a dispensary license in this environment is a very valuable thing. The current proposal, as it's being fashioned right now, is that the existing medical marijuana dispensaries, again, would have first crack at being able to sell for recreational use. That may prove to be a problem. There are a lot of voters who don't think that that's fair, but the people who are putting together this proposal for the 2020 ballot, I think, are going to include that provision.
A new Arizona law eventually will give the Arizona Department of Health Services the authority to inspect everything that that's being dispensed at these state licensed dispensaries. Is marijuana test? What does this marijuana testing law say specifically to help protect consumers of these so-called edibles, Don Luce?
Right. So marijuana, as you just noted, is sold in several different forms, one of which, of course, is an edible form. Now, if place that is preparing the food product were preparing anything other than marijuana, it would be inspected. It could be inspected, for instance, by the county health department, as restaurants are. But because in 2010, the Arizona Medical Marijuana Act had a provision specifically requiring reasonable notice, and that's a direct quote from the act, the Arizona Department of Health Services, which is in charge of keeping the dispensaries in compliance, has found that by giving notice of an inspection, what happens is that's not a very effective way to assure quality, because when they show up on the on site to do the inspection, in many cases, it turns out that no one is making anything in the kitchen, and so there's really nothing to inspect. What this new law, and it's actually Senate Bill 1494, requires is that the Department of Health Services inspect all medical marijuana products in a way to make sure that they're safe for consumer consumption. And just remember, there are about 200,000 medical marijuana users in Arizona. So this is a large group of people. If you can imagine 200,000 people consuming any other type of product, I'm quite sure that it would be important that the product be inspected for safety.
And the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, what is their role in this? Is this solely responsibility of the state or what?
Right. So because it is illegal under federal law, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration agency is a federal agency, it has no place in this inspection process. This is a very unique set of laws when it comes to marijuana use, because the feds can't inspect for the reason I just explained. So it falls upon the states to do the inspection. And in Arizona, it's not the county health inspectors. It's the Department of Health Services that is mandated with making sure that the products are safe for consumers and that the dispensaries are in compliance with the various other standards.
Well, I mean, as you point out, this is really a big deal. There's a lot of people using these products, and it continues to grow. Again, do you have kind of a feel on how many of these dispensaries are there in Arizona, Don Luce? You said there are more than 200,000 medical marijuana users in the state. How many dispensaries are there?
Okay, so there are a couple hundred thousand medical marijuana users. There are about 125 to 130 dispensaries, somewhere in that range. So it's a very limited supply source for what I think anyone would agree is a very broad demand base. You have, less than 200 dispensaries serving 200,000 users. It's pretty incredible. And each user is allowed 2.5 ounces to purchase 2.5 ounces every 2 weeks. Hmm. So if you do the math, and I haven't done it, but that's a lot of marijuana running through each dispensary. And I found it interesting that with regard to the 2020 proposal, the medical marijuana organizations are going to be actually financing it with millions of dollars, again, to try to get recreational paths in Arizona.
Wow. Huge business. Don Luce.
No, it's a multi-billion-dollar business nationwide. Absolutely.
Don Luce, your two books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, both these books now in their second printing. Don, where are they available, please?
The easiest way to purchase either is through Amazon. But they are available in some retail bookstores in the state of Arizona as well.
All right, Don Luce, always a pleasure. Thanks. Good talking with you, Don. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Have a great day.
Thanks. Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Don is our Buckmaster Show legal contributor. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show today, Thursday edition. Tomorrow we'll be talking Tucson water and that release of water into the Santa Cruz River. We'll get an update. How is that doing? We'll find out tomorrow. The director of Tucson Water will be our Friday focus interview. On behalf of Bob Dio, engineer producer for the Buckmaster Show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon and evening.